Hello, everyone. This is The Diamond Path, a weekly program based on Buddhist thought and action. My name is Tamarack Garlow. Each show we open up with a bell. Why? We do this at Sangha as well. Sangha is the Buddhist word for community, and we gather every week to do services and meditate together, and we always begin with a bell. Why would we do this? Well, the bell separates two worlds, the mundane world and the sacred world. So when we start our service, we walk from a place from the outside world, from our everyday lives, and then we arrive in a place, ring a bell, and that place turns to sacred ground. Now, sacred is a loaded word, as is the topic of today's discussion, spirit. So we're going to explore spirit and a few of its manifestations, and we're going to take the word sacred a little bit lighter, maybe, than we're used to, because we're really just leaving the mundane world, entering the world of spirit, the interconnectedness of everything, the core value pretty much behind all religions, that we are all one, we are all connected. So before we assume we know what spirit is, let's check it out in some of its manifestations. I'm no expert on Christianity, but generally in Christian tradition, I think spirit is understood to manifest from God, from the divine creator. There's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. The Holy Ghost is the spirit that imbues everything in creation. In Buddhism, we give this nature a name too, a few names, in fact. We give it a personal name, where Christians will call this the Christian God. We call the basis of all that is Virochana, which is a Sanskrit term, and it basically means radiating like the sun. But we don't look at this spirit in quite the same way. We being Buddhist, in Buddhism, there is not a recognized creator God. We are all subject to change. We are all subject to the influences of virtually everything in the universe. And what I mean by that is the interdependent action that happens between us and everything out there. That we are as much a creation, we are a creation of everything that came before us. And this process has gone on infinitely. So almost intellectually, we see no reason for a creator. But having said this, there is a lot of similarities between the Christian God, perhaps, and Virochana. But Virochana is looked at not so much as the consciousness, the individual consciousness that may or may not exist as Virochana, but we look at it in kind of a scientific way. We call it the field. This is a vast field that encompasses virtually everything that exists, much like spirit in the Christian tradition. If we look at life as this humongous matrix of interdependent phenomena, we tend to look less and less at any one object or person as a truly independent thing. So when we talk of spirit, we talk about the threads and the things that bind us all together. And it can take many forms. If we think in terms of the spirit of liberty, or the home team spirit, or the Christmas spirit, now what kind of spirit is that? If we say the home team spirit, I don't think all of us fall to our knees and approach a prayerful attitude. We look at more of some kind of thread, as I said, that runs through people, that suggests a common good, a common cause, a common feeling. So spirit is this suggestion of commonality, suggestion of interdependence, suggestion of being part of the whole. So when we talk of Vairochana, we talk about this underlying nature that has no attributes. No attributes. It's a non-dual system. There's no up, down, black, white, good, bad, chocolate, vanilla. There's no duality in the absolute. It is without distinction. And yet, from this field, this infinite field of no distinction and no attributes, comes virtually everything we know and everything we don't know. So the field takes on a significance because it is the core of everything we are. This field is a thread that connects all phenomena. And this field could easily be described as spirit. So when you have the spirit of liberty, for example, there's a feeling in the land. People are behind this. Maybe they're willing to fight for it. 250 years ago, spirit of revolution came up and people were swept by the feeling. Spirit shows up all the time. You could be in a room and somebody really upbeat just comes bounding in. They may not even have to say much, but there's a certain glow about this person. People are attracted to them. There's a spirit there that this person uses subconsciously to attract people and things to themselves. And conversely, there's times we've been in a room where someone has walked in and there's just this pale that comes over the room. This is kind of fomenting a negative spirit. Not a malicious thing, maybe, just another conflicted human being that doesn't bring much to the table. But nonetheless, we feel it. We feel this spirit, this downbeat feeling. So that spirit manifests in many ways. Now, the word spirit comes from the Latin word spiritus, which means spirit, but it can also mean breathe. And the root word of spiritus is spirare, which means to breathe. And this brings up an interesting connection. As we talked about in an earlier show, a very strong component of meditation is breathing. Now, this serves as a point of concentration, as we discussed, but it's also a very real representation of our connection with everything else out there. The oxygen molecules that you breathe in during meditation, and of course any other time, are exactly some of the same molecules breathed in by Buddha, Christ, Julius Caesar, Adolf Hitler. The same phenomena, the same structure of the universe is there for all of us to share. The air molecules have been in and out of us millions of times, and in and out of all of us millions of times. In this planet, where oxygen is the base of our life, it's a very real connection between all of us. It gives us life itself. And in that breath, in that connection, can be seen spirit by virtue of its very name. That's how it's seen. So as we're sitting in meditation and we're breathing in the same molecules that have been breathed by virtually everyone else around. We are connected through that string. So when Buddhism, and this is to kind of elaborate on spirit a bit, when Buddhism first came to Japan around 550, the current era, it ran into the indigenous religion that was there. It didn't have a name yet. It wouldn't come in for another 500 or 600 years, but eventually it became known as Shinto. And this indigenous population was much like the indigenous populations all over the world. And these people had a very interesting take on things, something that we sophisticated Westerners look at askance. These people believe that every rock and tree has a spirit, that virtually everything out there that we encounter has a spirit. And they give these spirits names. There's the rain god and the wind god and the tree god and the mountain god. And we look at this in our all too intellectual way and think this is just a bunch of hogwash. Well, Buddhism, after a small period of conflict with Shinto, before they got their name, just wound up marrying each other, and it's been a wonderful relationship ever since. Because down deep, Buddhism is very much about that. This connectedness, this total spirit that's everywhere. Every year we go to a 10-day training period if you're on the path to be ordained. There's a rather rigorous program that we have to go through every year. It gets a little easier after you make priest, but it's still kind of rough. We live a monastic life for 10 days. We get up at 3:30 in the morning. We do 324 full-body prostrations. We get 1.5 meals a day. We walk a lot, do a lot of services. And we have this one thing called a kaihogyo, which is the long walk. It's about 18 miles. And we take this walk over hill and dale, stay on the roads. But the point I'm trying to make is that this is a meditative walk, but it's also a walk where we try to recognize the spirit that's out there. And by illustration, it goes something like this. As we're walking along, any one of the group can ask the group to stop, because perhaps we've just passed a massive old pine tree or an old oak. Or it could be a beautiful view, or a pond in a nice setting. We feel the spirit in these places. And Shinto indeed believes that not only do trees and rocks and items have a spirit, but even things like intersections and views have a spirit. We don't have to get caught up so much in the material world. Spirit doesn't speak of material as much. It certainly permeates everything, but when we understand this phenomena out there, we feel it as we walk by. We can sense the life that has gone on under this tree, or the commerce, the action that has happened at this intersection. It could be as simple as a spot where you just know the deer have laid there for millennia, perhaps. Certainly the length of the forest. It was just a good spot to get away from the elements and be protected. We consider all of these very spiritual spots, and we have a certain mantra that we all chant together in honor of these spots. So this is an illustration of what spirit can mean. You can choose to look at the world as full of individual objects. There's a table, there's a chair, there's a train, there's Joe, there's Jane, there's any number of individual things. And that's not a very productive way of looking at life, and it's not a very accurate one either. When one starts thinking in terms of the other, there's immediately a barrier set up between those things that we call us and other. The Buddhist path is in large part a tool to break down this illusion, to get to the spirit inherent in the other, the spirit inherent in you, and the true fact that they are connected. As we wander through this lifetime, I think most of us long for connections. It's a very important and seminal part of the human condition. So often words and concepts have gotten in the way, and people become enemies. People become lost in their own greed, their own anger, and there's just a continual pressure to separate. Our whole entertainment industry is the good guys versus the bad guys. God, when I go into a video store to try to find a movie, I spend a half an hour going through the action flicks before I see something about some real substance. Is there anything inherently bad in action flicks? People killing other people? Well, it's entertaining, but what passes for entertainment, I have to question at times. When we have this continual process of trying to eliminate the bad and promote the good, which of course is a term fraught with interpretation, hence all the wars and the strife. In movies, of course, it's made pretty simple. The bad guys are just so bad, and the good guys are just so good, so we know who's good and bad, but life is not usually quite so simple. So if we start a process where we begin to work on dropping this whole concept of self and other, we begin to recognize the binding spirit between us. It's a vast, interconnected matrix of life that we have to deal with. We don't deal with individuals. Sure, if you deal with someone on a one-to-one basis, your first impression is, I'm dealing with them. The minute an argument comes up, I'm not dealing with them. And now you have a separation. Now you have competition. Life is really about cooperation, not competition. It's common sense. Whenever you have more individuals working on something, you have more strength, more power, the ability to get things done. So as we begin to develop compassion in our lives and wisdom in our lives, and compassion and wisdom are considered the two wings of Buddhism. You need both wings to fly. As you develop compassion and wisdom, you also develop this sense of spirit, this interconnectedness that goes on throughout life. We are not alone. We are intimately involved, both physically and mentally and spiritually, with every other sentient being out there, not to mention the spirit involved in the non-sentient things like stones and trees. Spirit is the binding factor that is going to create an enlightened and awakened future for us. But it's going to be a long path. Whether you choose to take the Buddhist path or another path, Buddhists believe that all paths that reduce suffering and increase happiness is a valid path. That's the yardstick. It's called skillful means. Whatever action you take, whatever thoughts you follow, whatever words you speak, you measure it against the skillful means measuring stick. Am I creating more suffering here by my actions and my words, both for myself or the other? Or am I creating less suffering, therefore promoting contentment, equanimity? The more that contentment and equanimity, compassion and wisdom rise to the surface, the more spirit imbues us throughout our whole day, not just for those moments on the cushion. So develop your spirit. Choose a path. I know in modern day times, choosing a path is a lot like shopping. We go out, we read books on a number of possibilities, and we do a little bit of all of them. And that's good for a while. But unless you pick a path, something that leads you step by step into a process that gets somewhere, you're really just sampling. So pick a path. It does not have to be Buddhist. And follow it. and just watch how spirit becomes a reigning factor in your life in all its manifestations. The Diamond Path airs twice a week, Sunday at 8:30 a.m. Each week we'll explore some aspect of life filtered through the Buddhist perspective. Comments or questions or for information regarding our regular Monday night meditation service can be addressed by calling me at 413-229-3263 or through email at primrosecottage@adelphia.net. The Diamond Path can be heard here on WBCR 97.7 LP or accessed on the net at www.diamondpath.blogspot.com. This is a production of Higashi Sangha and the Housatonic Radio Works. Goodbye, everyone.